So this morning we're going to continue with our series called Recentering. It's all about taking care of ourselves. And today's topic is rest. And our theme scripture for the series, I think, is particularly relevant here. In Matthew chapter 11, Jesus says, "Come to me, all you who are weary and burdened, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you and learn from me, for I am gentle and humble in heart, and you will find rest for your souls. For my yoke is easy and my burden is light." And we've said before that we might feel some tension with that scripture, because on the one hand, we all long for rest. Many of us are feeling tired, even exhausted. We have the pandemic situation and all the consequences of that. The political situation and the uncertainty of the election has only added to that. We have many of us feeling weighed down under the burden of injustice and oppression, and have been for decades, even centuries. And some of us beginning to struggle and wrestle with injustice and work for justice, and that can, we can feel the burden of that, and we many of us are feeling tired at the moment, so we long for rest. But at the same time, we may feel guilty about taking rest. We feel it's a luxury we can't afford. There's so much work to be done and we can't take our foot off the gas, so we've got to keep moving forward. And so I want to explore that tension a little bit this morning, and also say up front that I am no expert on this. Rest is something that I personally struggle with. So I'm hoping, you know, I've heard from teachers who say that you're a better teacher of a subject that you've struggled with rather than one that you've mastered. And I'm hoping that is the truth. And I'm hoping that it applies this morning. Let's look at some other scriptures about rest. In that beautiful metaphorical poem at the beginning of the Bible about creation, it says this in chapter 2. "Thus the heavens and the earth were completed in all their vast array. By the seventh day, God had finished the work he'd been doing. So on the seventh day, he rested from all his work. Then God blessed the seventh day and made it holy, because on it he rested from all the work of creating that he had done." Now, I don't think we need to take that literally, and there's lots of other scriptures that talk about God never slumbering or sleeping. You know, God doesn't rest, God doesn't get tired. The point here isn't God was tired and needed to rest. The point here is that rest is holy. Rest is a normal, healthy part of our existence, a normal, healthy part of reality. In fact, the Hebrew people were called to make it holy by setting aside a day a week to rest. It's normal, it's healthy. And the Hebrew scriptures are full of confirmation about that. In Psalm 23, it says, "The Lord is my shepherd, I lack nothing. He makes me lie down in green pastures. He leads me beside quiet waters. He refreshes my soul." In Psalm 127, verse 2, it says, "It is in vain that you rise up early and go late to rest, eating the bread of anxious toil, for he gives sleep to his beloved." In other words, our love relationship, our connection to God is all about rest. God isn't a taskmaster demanding more, but gifting us with rest. And Jesus rested. In Mark chapter 6, he calls his disciples to rest. In verse 31, it says, "Then, because so many people were coming and going, they did not even have a chance to eat. He said to them, 'Come with me by yourselves to a quiet place and get some rest.'" I think what's interesting about that scripture is it comes just after a piece of narrative where John the Baptist has been executed, and the news has come to Jesus. And John the Baptist had spoken out against the injustice of King Herod. He'd been imprisoned as a result of that, and then was eventually executed. And you get the sense that the disciples and Jesus are kind of weary from the struggle for justice and love and peace that they're in. And this news just accentuates that tiredness, and they need to rest. And many of us might be able to relate to that at the moment. One of my favorite stories about Jesus is one we looked at a few months ago, back in the summer, where he calms the storm. And the disciples are sailing across the Sea of Galilee. They're experienced fishermen, but they're really afraid because they think the boat's sinking in the storm. And they kind of get annoyed with Jesus because Jesus is asleep. And they're like, "Jesus, why aren't you helping us?" And we might have experienced that, you know, where people kind of guilt us for resting or feel like they're working harder than we are. And Jesus just doesn't take the bait. He just gets up and does his thing, but he doesn't apologize. He doesn't in any way give the impression that he shouldn't have been resting. He implies that they have their responsibilities and he has his. And there's something beautifully healthy and balanced about that. And Jesus was took rest and made rest an important part of his life. Science, you know, backs up this ancient wisdom. If you are an athlete or you work out, you'll know that it's as important to have recovery days and rest days as it is to exert your body. Elite athletes in particular have to really focus on recovery. From a medical point of view, We know that, amongst many other things, prolonged unrest raises our cortisol level, which results in high blood pressure, high blood glucose, we put on weight, our immunity falls, we're more prone to infections and cancer. We just live a more fatigued and stressed life. From the world of the arts, last week we were hearing how creativity helps us take care of ourselves. Wonderful service where Ruth talked about creativity and other people from the community shared about what they're doing creatively. Rest helps us be more creative. Neurophysiologically, we know that when we're resting, our brain kicks into different wave patterns that connect different areas of the brain up and mean that we're more able to have breakthrough thinking, aha moments, creative problem solving. I think we know that intuitively, we know that when we've taken a rest, we're often more clear-minded about things. And when Leonardo da Vinci was painting The Last Supper, he took frequent breaks, and his patron got annoyed with him, said, get a move on, you've got to finish this painting. And he famously said, the greatest geniuses sometimes accomplish more when they work less. So that's a good one to quote back to anybody who's guilting us about taking a rest or giving us a hard time. From the world of business, Henry Ford, for instance, in the early part of the 20th century, did some of his own internal research and realized that there's only so far you can push your workers. They start making more mistakes and productivity goes down when they're overworked. So he introduced the shorter working day, he reduced it from 12 hours to 8, and closed production lines on Saturdays and had increased productivity as a result of that, even though all his contemporaries said he was crazy for doing it. More recently, the whole world of sleep has been opened up to us. There's all kinds of research been done on the neurophysiology of sleep, and we sleep for all kinds of different reasons. Three of the main ones seem to be energy conservation, although that's probably not the most important one actually. But rather the other two, restoration and brain processing and memory consolidation. It seems that when we're asleep, genes get turned on that control metabolic pathways that restore various things in our bodies. So sleep has a restorative function. If we are rested, we remember things better, we put down memories better, we remember tasks better, we learn skills better. So, actually going back to the creativity, that's true in the world of music. Practice followed by rest results in more advanced than just practice in the world of musicians. So, sleep is a really important part of our lives, and there's all kinds of benefits. You can just take a look at this slide, and I won't go through them all, but there's medical benefits, there's psychological benefits, And that last bullet there, when we sleep well, we have less compensation mechanisms kicking in, like drinking caffeine, drinking alcohol, overeating, all the things we do to accommodate the fact that we're feeling tired. So all round, rest, sleep is a really good thing. Now, the problem is, I don't think we have a problem with that. I think we all agree that rest is a good thing. I think we all agree that we should have more sleep, we should have more rest. That's not really our challenge. The challenge is that we are probably the most sleep-deprived culture in the history of humanity. And many of us right now are feeling really tired and feeling weary, really weary. So what is the problem? Why do we resist rest? And what I want to do is just approach this from two angles, really. Like just look at, like, how did we get here? How do we get into such a state where we're so resistant to rest? And then look at, okay, what can we do about it? How can we change our practices? How can we change our habits and actually live a life that's more restful? So let's just look a little bit at the background. I want to illustrate this, I want to quote a couple of things. The first one is from Henry IV, Part II, Shakespeare. Where it says, "O sleep, O gentle sleep, nature's soft nurse, how have I frightened thee, that thou no more will weigh down my eyelids and steep my senses in forgetfulness." So there's a very positive view of sleep from the Elizabethan era, Shakespeare, 16th century. It seems that we once had this really positive view of sleep and would bemoan lack of sleep. But contrast that with this quote from Thomas Edison: "Sleep is a criminal waste of time and a heritage from our cave days." So that's a very different perspective on sleep. And Thomas Edison, of course, was a leading scientist, an inventor. He didn't invent the light bulb, but he was very instrumental in the development of that technology, and very instrumental in the development of electricity coming into people's homes. And so he, it's interesting, I feel like represents in some sense the technological advancement of humanity. And the fact that we can overcome things, we can overcome the natural world. So whereas we used to rest in the darkness, you know, we'd work in the day and rest in the dark. Now we've got light and light bulbs and electricity, and so we can work in the nighttime as well. We can extend the working day. We can have more progress because we're going to work harder, and we're invincible, and we can overcome whatever obstacle faces us. And our technological advancement, obviously, was a wonderful thing. The Industrial Revolution was a wonderful thing. And many people actually thought that it might lead to more leisure. Bertrand Russell in the early 20th century wrote an essay called In Praise of Idleness. He was a British philosopher. And he, along with many other economists and philosophers, felt that our increased technological prowess would result in more people, not just the rich, but the average person, being able to have more leisure time and more rest. But that obviously didn't happen. And that's, I think, because of unintended consequences of our technological advancement. Just as we recognize that in the Industrial Revolution, with all its benefits, we also had the degradation of our environment that we're dealing with now. We also had the degradation of humanity, where health and safety issues were a problem. There was gross inequity and injustice. And again, we're still dealing with those problems today. Well, likewise, I think we've seen there's a human problem that has persisted into the present, which is that we feel we don't have to listen to our environment, don't have to listen to our bodies, that we can just keep going and keep going and keep going, that there's no limits to us. We're invincible. We can overcome all the obstacles. And sleep and rest has been viewed as almost like a curse, that's something to be overcome. It's a waste of time, and we need to eliminate it and work against it, rather than it being a gift and something beautiful and wholesome and healthy and even holy. And I think we've all bought into that in different ways. That we feel that the harder we work, the better we are. The harder we work, the more we'll accomplish, the more happy we'll be, the more successful we'll be. Margaret Thatcher, the 1980s politician back in the UK, who was the sort of paragon of, lift yourself up by your bootstraps and work hard, and free enterprise is what's going to win the day, is famous for saying, "Sleep is for wimps." She apparently slept only four hours a night, and obviously we all have different sleep requirements, but that most people are not going to get by on that. And sleep is not for wimps. Sleep is for normal, healthy people. But we've sort of bought into this. This is how we've moved, and we've got into a situation now in the US where we're chronically rest deprived and sleep deprived. Just take a look at this slide here. From the 2013 Gallup poll, 40% of us are getting less than the recommended amount of sleep. That's nearly half of us. In the 1950s, 8 hours was the average. It's down to 6.5 or less now. 1.5 to 2 hours less now. Teenagers who need extra sleep because of growth need 9 hours, are getting 6.5, and many 5 or less. I remember, I put 4 kids through high school, and just remember them having to get up at the crack of dawn to get the bus, after school activities that meant they didn't get home till later, had to do their schoolwork, their homework, and they were sleep deprived throughout high school. And shift workers, again, with light meaning we don't have to be dictated by day and night, shift workers come in, obviously for a long time now, and that messes with our body clocks, and shift workers on average are getting sometimes 5 hours or less sleep a day. This is a shocking statistic. If you look at road traffic accidents in the US, 100,000 are caused every year by microsleeps, where we just fall asleep at the wheel, even temporarily, because we're so exhausted. When we look at the from a cultural point of view, you know, we talked about Henry Ford reducing work hours and giving people a day off previously, but that's not really persisted. Workers are made to work harder and longer. And when you actually compare the US to other countries around things like vacation, and you can take a look at this side, you realize that America, I mean, there are no mandated vacation days required for American workers. When you compare that to France or the UK or other countries, and you know, maybe people think the Europeans are lazy, but it's probably a healthier lifestyle. And even though we don't get that much vacation in the US, you know, we're so driven and so worried that we're not performing well that most people or many people do not take their full vacation quota. A study in 2012 showed that 9.2 days of vacation gets left on the table by each worker. So then, you know, they're just so worried about their jobs and productivity that they're not even taking the limited vacation time that they're meant to take. So you know, we're in a bit of a state. And let me say, it's not just an American problem, right? I grew up in England, I really struggle with this. I used to work as a medical doctor, and when I was a junior doctor, we'd often work 100-hour weeks, and because of being on call and your normal working week, and then being on call, and when you were on call in hospital, you were pretty much working as normal. It wasn't just sleep for 5 hours and work for two. It was like you were up all night usually. I remember one occasion going into work at 9 a.m. on the Friday morning. I was on call I did my full work week. I was on call that night the whole weekend. And then worked the Monday through, and then actually was on call that night and had to go through to the Tuesday. I don't know how many hours that is, but it was ridiculous. And during that period, actually, I fell asleep talking to a patient. I was sat at the side of the bed, and they had to wake me up. Very dangerous. And now it's illegal, and they've made all sorts of changes. But back then, we thought that was kind of heroic. You know, you just sleep. You don't need sleep, and the better doctors were the ones that could operate under those terrible circumstances. And I think that kind of got inbred into me. I had a sort of tendency that way already, I think. You know, for instance, when we had vacations, even during that time, I think of my poor wife in this regard. I'd spend many of my vacations going abroad to work, medical relief and public health situations in the developing world, mainly in Latin America. Sometimes my wife, she was a midwife, would come with me as well. When we took normal vacations, we'd sometimes, especially before kids and when the kids were young, we'd make a trip to a European city and spend the weekend. And I love art and history, and I think we've only got a couple of days, so I'd plan it all out, and we'd go here and there, and it would pack out the time. And honestly, it probably wasn't terribly relaxing. And I do feel for my wife, but I console myself in I saw this postcard recently where it says it's the first 50 years of marriage that are the hardest. So I keep saying to her, don't worry, we're a few months short of 30 years. So just another 20 years and things will start getting easier living with me. But I'm happy to say I have actually got better over the years. And I put a lot of that down to my own spiritual growth, my own spiritual development, and having to deal with a lot of my own dysfunctions that drive that resistance to rest. And we'll get into that in a little bit, because I think a lot of these things are very, very internal. So I've grown, I've got better at it. I now long for and only take vacations where I do pretty much nothing, because I've realized I need the rest and I want the rest. And dealing with some of those inner drives and inner dysfunctions is a beautifully relieving thing. But I still struggle with it. So I mentioned to you a few weeks ago about I had some health issues at the back end of last year, and ended up being diagnosed with a cardiac arrhythmia, which is exacerbated by stress and lack of rest. And so I changed some of my habits, put some more boundaries down. I think had a healthier lifestyle, addressed some sleep issues as well, and got better, better at it. And then the pandemic kicked in. And so things changed, life changed. I think we can all relate to this. Work came home a lot more. Things like Zoom and electronic communication became more invasive. I some of those boundaries I put down began to slip. And I slipped a bit over the last few months. But I'm beginning to restore that again. So we get back on track. And I share that as an illustration. We're calling this series recentering because we know we have to redo it. We have to recenter. It's not centering for the first time and then you're done. I think with all growth, we struggle and we grow and we move forward and then we kind of move back a little bit. You know, we take our eye off the ball and then we have to keep at it and keep going. So that's the nature of change. And that's certainly my experience, even in ministry where, you know, there's all kinds of drivers that make us want to keep performing and keep, there's so much work to do and there's so many needs to meet and that kind of thing. When we think about this though, the point is we want to change, right? It's not just looking at, okay, here's how we got here and this is the nature of the problem. We want to change. So I want to look at change from two aspects as well, both the inward and the outward. So let's look at sort of inside and consider what's driving this? What kind of dysfunctions? I've alluded to some of them, but what kind of dysfunctions drive this? And then look at, okay, outwardly, what practices are going to help us? What can we do to develop different habits? When we think about looking internally, something I think we've got to pay attention to is this, that I think we're less troubled by lack of rest than we are by many other dysfunctions. So for instance, if I was to say to you, I'm addicted to benzodiazepines, or I'm addicted to opioids, or I have an eating disorder, or I'm a sex addict. I think you'd be quite shocked. I think it'd be like, oh my gosh, Matthew's got more problems than we even thought he had. I would struggle to say that kind of thing. It would feel kind of shameful. I'd be embarrassed, just being honest. There would be a struggle. And just so you know, none of those are true at the moment. If I was to say to you, I haven't taken a day off for 6 months, I think you'd be way less shocked. I'm way less embarrassed to say that. It's just less of a problem, right? It's less taboo. And conversely, if I was to say to you, I've taken a day off every week for the last 6 months, and I've taken all my vacation time, and I've taken a break every day. I would actually be a little hesitant to say that because I'd be worried you might think I was lazy, and I don't want you to think that. So this is the nature, I think, of the problem. We just tolerate it way too easily. And that can mean we have less urgency to deal with it, less urgency to pay attention to it, even though it might be crippling us and really weighing us down. Like going back to that scripture where Jesus says, come to me, all you are weary and heavy burdened. That's probably where we're at, but we're less inclined to do something about it. So I think we've got to be really honest when we look inside and vigilant when we look inside. So just want to share some of the things that this is not a exhaustive list by any means, but just some of the things that might be root issues, root problems in us struggling to take rest. Firstly, identity. Do we put the emphasis on what we accomplish, what we do, rather than just who we are? If that's the case, then we're just going to be driven to hyperactivity and not taking rest because we want to feel better about ourselves and we want to impress other people and them to feel better about us. Fear and insecurity about what other people think about us, what we think about ourselves, might be fear about the future. You know, we've got to control our future, and we do that by working hard now. Lack of contentment. We perhaps don't appreciate what we have. We're less inclined to live within our means. We enjoy now less and want something more for the future. And so we're constantly stretching into the future. Now, you know, there's a balance here because obviously that can result in great, wonderful accomplishment. But we have to be conscious that when we're not satisfied, when we lack contentment with our lives now, it's often going to drive us to activity that isn't necessarily going to be productive. It's not necessarily going to satisfy us and make us content. We just keep going and going and going. Taking ourselves too seriously. Do we have a savior complex where we feel like we've got to be we're responsible for all the problems. We've got to sort all the problems out, and only we can sort them out. We are indispensable. We have a very individualistic approach where we've got to do it. We can't trust other people. We can't take time away and allow other people to take on responsibilities. It might not be done well enough. It might not be done the way we wanted it to be done. And, you know, all these things kick in where we're just taking ourselves too seriously. And then a victim mentality where, you know, in some sort of quiet way, we enjoy being perceived as being hardworking and overworking and responsible for everything. And we sort of revel in that. And we portray a sense that we're not really in control of our environment. These things are overwhelming us. We've just got to do it. We can't avoid it. It's all beyond our control. These are just some of the internal issues that can drive our lack of rest. And I let me just say, I've struggled with all of these, still do to varying degrees. And there's many more as well, which I struggle with. So we're all different and we'll all have a different list. In the discussion questions this week, we're just going to take a look at some of those things, do some reflection on it, so you can work out what might be going on for you personally. But let's do that honest work together. But let's shift now to what can we do about it? So, you know, how can we change our behaviors? How can we develop new habits? What are practices that might really help us? And again, just got a few here. It's not an exhaustive list, and we can dig a little bit deeper into these in the discussion questions this week. Firstly, listen. Let's listen to our own bodies, what our bodies tell us. When we're feeling tired, it probably means we need to rest rather than we just need to work harder or we need to drink another cup of coffee. Listen to people who love us. I've been really helped with this by just listening to my wife give me feedback about, you're tired and you're behaving like a tired person. And rather than me thinking, I'm not tired, I've just got to keep going. And just being able to respond and listen to in that way. Secondly, sleep, scheduling sleep. The data would suggest that most of us, and we're all different, of course, but most of us need to sleep about 36% of the day. If we live to 85, that means we're going to be asleep for 30 years of it. And there's two ways of looking at that. One would be, what a waste of time. Thomas Edison would have looked at it that way. But I think actually there's a part of all of us that thinks, 30 years? Really? We're giving away 30 years of our life? Another way of looking at it is, wow, sleep must be really important. So I need to get my sleep and view it as a gift. View it as an essential part of life, not as a luxury, but something that we absolutely need. And schedule it. And I'm not going to go into details now because there's all sorts of websites and apps that can help us with sleep. We just have to do the scheduling, going to bed. But there's things that we can do to help beforehand, to help aid sleep and during sleep. And so, you know, I won't go into all that, but check there's lots of resources out there that we can all check. Thirdly, taking breaks. I think of three kinds of breaks: vacations, so prolonged time off as we are able to. There's weekly breaks, so taking a day off a week. And then there's breaks during the day. A contemporary of Margaret Thatcher's back in the 80s, Gordon Gekko in the film Wall Street, he famously said, lunch is for wimps. Maybe we think that. Maybe we think whether it's a lunch break or any kind of break during the day, we can't do that. But taking a break in the day has been proven to increase our productivity, increase our creativity, as we were talking about earlier. And it's just healthy for us. It's good for us. So scheduling breaks is a really important thing. Boundaries kick in here because very often we might schedule breaks and then stuff creeps in. I know this is where I'm really weak because, you know, I'll set my schedule and, you know, I have a day off, I'm taking a Sabbath rest and I'm taking it all seriously. And then something happens or something creeps in and those boundaries start to shift and before long they're non-existent. So keeping strong, healthy boundaries and guarded time, so jealously guarding our time. I think also on this, it gets more complicated in the modern era because our rest days might still include social media and information overload because it's so accessible to us. So being bounded around information, I think, as well, and allowing our minds as well as our bodies just to rest is really important, perhaps now more than ever. Embracing creativity and play. Again, we were hearing last week about how the benefits of creativity. And, I think creative activity helps us rest. It helps us switch off. Playing helps us not to take ourselves too seriously. Just having fun with no agenda, sport, games, hobbies. So just before the shutdown, I took a pottery class with my wife, and it was a 4-week thing, and we'd go in for about an hour and a half at a time, and we made these mugs, and I just found it so absorbing. It was like, you know, going at the end of the day, no matter what happened in the day, I'd just be so focused on this pottery and creating, you know, both the pottery aspect of it, and then decorating it, and then the painting it, and the hour and a half would fly by. It was so restful because I was so absorbed. It was like I was taken out of the flow of my reality into a place of rest. And I experienced that also with other hobbies. Like I love nature. I love bird watching, and I find something so absorbing about it. Like when you actually have to look and look with detail, like the difference between a female rose-breasted grosbeak and a female purple finch, for instance. You know, there's subtle differences, very different species, subtle differences. It can be engrossing, and sort of, again, just I get caught up in a different reality that I find very restful. So having these pastimes, these hobbies, is really important for us, and healthy and good and normal, even if they're not productive in their own right. There's no particular agenda. They're just enjoyable. That's God's gift to us. That's what Jesus wants for us. And then finally, supporting one another. We'll talk a bit more about this next week, so we're going to talk about relationships. But you know, sometimes we're not able to take a break or not able to take a rest, and we need somebody who can just take the reins for us for a while, so that we can check out. And so that's one way we can support one another. But again, we'll talk a little bit more about that next week. So I hope this has been helpful. Again, we've got discussion questions to dig into this a little bit deeper, and some reflections in there, and some suggestions for practices. We're all different. Okay, so our response to this is all going to be different. But let's make a commitment to being restful people, healthy, restful people. And as we take communion now, I think we could view this next few moments as an opportunity for rest. During communion, we're remembering Jesus, and we're remembering the one who calls us into rest, who's not imposing on us, but is inviting us to be relieved of burden and relieved of pressure. And so for this next few moments, let's just absorb that. And, you know, there's things we've all got to do. We're going to do those after this service. We've all got our to-do list. But right now, we're not going to do anything. Right now, we're just going to spend time with Jesus. So as Kevin and Gina lead us in communion, let's rest together. Thank you.